Great. And Jeff, could you talk to us a little bit about the Army Air Forces?
Yes, first I'd just like to mention and thank Chris Henry and the EAA for putting this event together, and it's a real pleasure to be here. With the U.S. Air Force, as Matt had mentioned, the Air Force was part of the Army at the time, known as the Army Air Forces, and just before the war started and just after, there were some battles fought politically that put air power on the same level as ground forces. So that was very important. And in World War II, we see the first true global air force. There were Army Air Forces personnel that were flying in the Arctic and Alaska all the way to the deserts of North Africa and everything in between. And to kind of piggyback on the growth of the Army Air Forces, as with the other forces as well, in 1939, when the Germans invade Poland, the then known as the Army Air Corps had 2,400 aircraft and 20,000 airmen. And at its peak in World War II, it had 80,000 aircraft and 2.4 million airmen. That's more than a 100-fold increase in personnel, and many of them trained in highly technical areas. Now, the Army Air Forces had two kind of main ways that it supported the war effort. One was through strategic attack, and the other way was through direct support of Army forces. Ground forces. So I just want to mention some of the very important ways that the Army Air Forces helped the Allies win World War II. In Europe, the F-18s win on that one. In World War II, our heavy bomber crews attacked the German heartland and destroyed their ability to produce oil. They also destroyed much of their transportation infrastructure. But just as importantly, before that, the Army Air Force's heavy bomber crews permitted the Allies to land at D-Day because they swept the skies of the German fighter force. They broke the back of the German fighter force. In the Pacific, B-29 crews attacked the Japanese homeland, and through those strategic attacks, and the dropping of the atomic bombs made an enormous contribution to the U.S. and our allies not having to invade Japan. But also, something that's not well known is the Army Air Forces had an airlift over the Himalayas that kept China in the war when they were cut off by land. So the Army Air Forces played a key role in winning World War II for the Allies. And then 2 years after the war ended, the U.S. Army Air Forces became an independent service, the U.S. Air Force.
Terrific. Thank you guys for that good general overview, just to kind of remind us of the scale of the things that we're talking about here. Well, we clearly have this group of terrific veterans representing different branches, representing the different theaters of war that they fought in. So we thought we'd kind of go through chronologically a little bit in when and where they served. And with that said, I think we'd like to start with you, Lucky, if that's okay, because you started earliest. Jeff, did you want to ask him a particular question, or?
Yeah, I think one question would be, you were there about midway through the bombing campaign. What were some of the biggest problems that you guys had to face as B-17 crews bombing Germany?
Our biggest problem was freezing. We were flying at 25 to 29,000 feet in an alien atmosphere. The temperatures were minus 50 to 60 degrees below zero, and we were unpressurized. That meant we had to be tethered to the aircraft for heating, for oxygen, because we could not subsist at those altitudes without supplemental oxygen, radio communications, and how it impacted and affected our abilities to function at that altitude in formation was a real surprise, and something that we were not totally prepared to endure. But we had no choice. Our commanders insisted that we go out despite the British admonition that we were suicidal, that we could not sustain the losses that we would be inflicted upon us, and they were right, unfortunately, because our losses were horrendous. We did prevail, however, for the simple reason, the singular reason, that America outproduced the world in planes and crews. And contrary to the popular belief at that time, we were able to sustain our losses, which were much higher than had ever been predicted, of something like 5% of our attacking force. We were sustaining 25 and 30% of our forces being lost consistently when I first arrived in England in the spring of 1943.
So could you talk a little bit about the type of airplane that you flew, the B-17, and do you feel like that was the right tool for the job? And it, you know, what are the things that you liked about it?
Well, we certainly developed a very early affinity and love and affection for the aircraft that we were flying that Boeing had invented and produced beginning in 1935. Mm-hmm. But they had improved it to some extent, added the Norden bomb sight, which was supposedly our secret weapon, for precision, quote, precision bombing, when actually after the war, evaluation of our bombing accuracy indicated that if we hit the target within 9 miles, 25% of the time, it was accidental. But the B-17 could sustain and did get us home with much more battle damage than usually the B-24. We were very grateful for that. I was so grateful personally that when I got back to the States, the first thing I did was go buy some Boeing stock. But the airplane was a dream to fly. It performed its mission remarkably well. And of course, even though there were fewer of them produced during World War II, 12,743 against the B-24s, and they were produced over 18,422. So there were almost 50% more B-24s produced in World War II than B-17s. Today, there are probably 10 flyable B-17s against only one or possibly two B-24s. So the B-17, when it was introduced to the European theater, was a deciding factor. And despite the fact that we were going against extremely formidable odds, thank God we did prevail. Mm-hmm. But we prevailed. We prevailed not only upon the effort that those of us who were flying at that time as air crew, but also for our hometown heroes who were outproducing the world and keeping the home fires burning so we'd have a home to come back to. And unfortunately, we never recognize those of you who supported us so magnificently, or else we never would have sustained our victory. Mm-hmm. and thank you.
Now, I think one of the things that you have said as you've talked about one of the troubles that you had in the flying is the lack of escort.
So yes.
Can you talk about that just a little bit?
Certainly. When we arrived in England in May of 1943, Axis Sally came on the radio and greeted our group. "Welcome to the war, 100th Bomb Group. You're out of your element. This is none of your business. But as long as you're here, we're going to teach you a lesson." And they did. The only escort that could be afforded us was by the RAF Spitfires and Hurricanes, whose range was so limited that they could barely stay with us until we crossed the channel and entered the enemy territory, because all of England was totally occupied at that point. But we had no escort whatsoever. We're going out broad daylight, high altitude, cold as it could be, and only later, when P-51s and P-47s and some P-38s were introduced into the 9th Air Force to support us and escort us, did we get any assistance whatsoever. We were having to depend entirely upon the closeness of our formations and maintaining those in order to mutually protect each other. But the Germans were extremely savvy, they were extremely experienced, and they were extremely well equipped. And so we were going against the professionals. And mind you, they had their backs to the wall. They were defending their homeland. And we were 6,000 miles away. So they were right. It was not our business, not our war. But we were there, and we were ordered to continue to bomb them and bring the Nazis to their knees, which, thank God, we did.